You are listening to another edition of Block Report Radio with the People's Minister of Information, J.R. Valray. Today, our guest is Jamal Ibn Mumia. He is the oldest son of Black Panther, FBI counterintelligence program victim, internationally known journalist, and political prisoner of war, Mumia Abu-Jamal. We're going to be talking about some of the contradictions in this 43-year-old case that are rarely talked about in any media. Jamal Ibn Mumia will read from court transcripts and affidavits to remind our audience about what went down the night that Officer Faulkner was killed in 1981 and Mumia Abu-Jamal was blamed for it. Jamal, what is it like being the son of political prisoner Mumia Abu-Jamal?
I am Jamal Ibn Mumia, his oldest son. And when you have your father actually snatched away at the age of 9, and there's no physical contact till you are at least to the age of 39 or 40, because he'd been on death row for 30 years, right? So there's a lot of things that you look at and you wondering about the system. And just by him fighting for his life, always standing on his innocence, always claiming his innocence, and it's just been a struggle, because people forget the perspective of his humanity, that he was actually a journalist before he was incarcerated. He was actually a father before he was incarcerated. He was actually like an uncle, and all these things that he actually did disrupted during this period. So it's been very complex to get that part out to the people, instead of what the media and people put out as convicted cop killer or these, you know, ad hominem attacks. So one of the things I like to do and always bring the perspective of his humanity, of what he was. So it's always been an ongoing struggle, but we still fighting for him to come home.
When you talk about his humanity and you look at the image of Mumia that has been built in the media, from the mainstream media, but even from the left-wing media, what are your thoughts when you don't see, or, you know, when people don't get to see the behind-the-scenes human person? What kind of things cross your mind?
A lot of things cross my mind. One of the things is being misinformed. You have disinformation, misinformed information, and disinformation comes from the media. Right? And a lot of times people don't do the research, don't do the work, so they really don't get to understand the person. Of course, he's done a lot of things during his incarceration, and he's accomplished a lot of goals. But if we can just take one moment and look at what would he have been doing and what magnitude he'd be at had he been still out here in the free world. So a lot of stuff be looking like the information that going out, it need to be clear. The support, the stuff that the media puts out need to be checked. And there's a lot of things, when I look back at his situation, it's things that people forgot about or they're not speaking on. And, you know, when you look at his case, you look at all them different things going around in his case. Like, you know, currently they had the thing with the boxes that was found magically in the district attorney's closet at their office, that was moved from Arch Street to another street. It's like all these boxes of evidence with his name on it, and they was like, oh yeah, they wasn't turned over to the defense because they were misplaced, and they was this and that. So there's a lot of things like the original officer, you know, that was on the scene. I'm talking about, when I say original officer, I'm talking about the one that was Alfonso Giordano, which was the Philadelphia police inspector, that architected the frame up at the scene. You know, people don't see these things because they forget. They just go with what the media is showing. We have to, at this time of information that we have to do the research. We have to ask the questions and stand on why this happened. What's happening with this? Why there ain't nobody talking about this? Where's this person at? What happened with this person? You know, we had things like even Arnold Beverly when he, you know, did a confession. Nobody's talking about that.
Who is Arnold Beverly? Remind the people real quick.
Okay, Arnold Beverly was a self-described hitman who, in 1999, he confessed to doing the murder of police officer Faulkner. Nobody did nothing about that. They said basically like, oh, okay, the courts ain't going to allow it because it's time barred or something like that. Or it was something like never got to no light. But to me, no rock should be unturned. And you got Giordano. Nobody knows about him. He was the police inspector that actually architected the frame-up part, right? Meaning that the confessions and all of this stuff. And he's not only a dirty cop, but he's a favorite police commissioner for the late Frank Rizzo, Mayor Frank Rizzo that was in Philadelphia at that time. So these things need to be reviewed. Like, who was these people? What was their background? How was they all connected? And why wasn't this in the trial? Why wasn't this in none of the hearings or something? You know what I mean? There's a reason for this. They be moving stuff around, and people is getting blinded by the media saying cop killer or this and that or another MOVE supporter or Mumia supporter. They throw these words up there to trigger people or to just have people wag the dog tail, you know? Look over here. This is shiny. Nothing to see over here, though, what's going on. So my thing is just living behind the shadows, knowing these things is going on, knowing these things took place, like a person actually confessed to the situation. You know, why wasn't they tried? Person took a lie detector test, all that, and passed it. But nobody knows that. These are the things that bothers me, because now my father has great-grandchildren, because I have grandchildren. And they go to visit him, and they ask tough questions. You know, like, why are you not home, Grandpa? Why they still got you here? You know? And these things we have to look at. In our date and time now with social media, we can do, you say you do fact checking, check the facts. See, where is Arnold Beverly at now? See where Alfonso Giordano is and see what he done. Where's past that? How's he connected? Because a lot of times we overlook these things and we see the names like Ed Rendell. He was the DA at the time, but, you know, he done different things and he moved up and we forget all about it. But can they all be connected? So my thing is, what's the cover-up? The cover-up is all those dirty people that have been involved to put my father in this position. And that is a position of incarceration and slow death row. Because to me, life imprisonment is no different than death row.
Right.
You know, I don't care how they sugarcoat it in one of the lesser evils. My thing is, how could you be removed off of death row after 30 years after Judge Yon sees something that was unconstitutional? I ain't the smartest person in the world, but if something is unconstitutional, then the whole case should have been reversed.
Right.
How is this is not looked at this time? So you're not good for death row, but we're going to put you in life right now. And then we're going to spin it and say, oh, the prosecution got a chance to answer. These are game thematics. Why these are not being contested? How is this even possible in the day and time that we live in, that as social media, people that can get the internet, people that can review these things, you know, fact check or whatever they want to do, and see who is Arnold Beverly, see who is Alfonso Giordano, you know, which was a corrupted police officer inspector, you know, that got arrested later on and helped the feds. Because 1987, 88, the late 80s, all of a sudden, the whole police district down there from the 6th precinct, downtown Philly, they got like 20-something, 11, 12, 20 cops all locked up for corruption. How this case ain't overturned? This is like insanity. You know what I mean? So we look at things like that's the stuff behind the scenes that people don't see. And those things like with the family, because we got so many people involved, I can't say I know everybody. But what I can say, that the people that I do know, they know that I'm not happy with a lot of things on the way it's going, because now it's been over 40 years, right? My father's still incarcerated. I wasn't seen him a few weeks back. just passed. And, you know, he's trying to work on his health, trying to get himself together. But I'm like, man, we need you out of here. He said, son, I want to come home. I said, I know you want to come home. But these are the things people are not seeing.
Right.
You know, man is still standing on his innocence. And it's just like, just to give you a background on, I know I said some names. If you got time, I'll tell you about a thing with Giordano real quick. Uh-huh. Just so you can get a background on it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Alfonso Giordano is a Philadelphia police inspector, right, that architected the frame up at the scene. And Giordano, not only a dirty cop, but a favorite of the brutal and racist police commissioner and late Mayor Frank Rizzo, commander of the police department SWAT team, conducted the raids on the Black Panther Party in the late 60s, when Mumia was a well-known spokesman. Giordano, also in charge of the year-long police siege of the MOVE organization home from 1977 to 1978, ending with police attack on MOVE supporters, including children in the house, and led to 30 and 100 years sentences of the MOVE 9. Mumia publicly challenged Rizzo and DA Ed Rendell about the raid and the brutality and arrest. Giordano was at the scene 3 minutes after the first radio call for backup from Faulkner. He found Mumia already thrown into a paddy wagon, shot and critically wounded, and beaten by the police. Giordano knew exactly who Mumia was. Giordano's first act was to further assault Mumia, hitting him in the head with his baton, hurling racial slurs, and Giordano set up the false witness IDs from the cab driver Chobert and Cynthia White. His lying report that Mumia confessed was featured in the news. Giordano was the police witness in the pretrial proceeding. Judge Sable ruled that Giordano could testify at Mumia's trial about his false confession. Then, without explanation, Giordano did not testify. Instead, the prosecution dropped notice of the hospital confession reported 2 months after the shooting. The why behind Giordano's absence from the trial and the fabrication of Mumia's hospital confession is explained by the fact that December 1981, when Faulkner was murdered, Giordano was a target of ongoing federal investigations into Philadelphia police corruption, including collaboration with organized crime and gambling, prostitution, and drug dealing. Proof from court records of those prosecutions and affidavits of the key FBI confidential informants, Donald Herson, May 1999, his federal trial testimony led to some 30 cop convictions. Targets included James Carlini, head of the Police Homicide Division, John D. Benedetto, head of the Central Division where Faulkner was assigned, as well as Inspector Giordano. This was the police chain of command and the frame-up prosecution of Mumia. In February 1982, Giordano was removed from his inspector command post and transferred to a desk job in the police personnel division. This was the same time as the prosecution's roundtable meeting with police witnesses and the dates of new and false police reports of Mumia's hospital confession. Then, on the first working day after Mumia was convicted and sentenced to death on July 5, 1982, Giordano retired from the police force at full pay, documented by police personnel records. D. Benedetto and other Central Division police officers were convicted on corruption charges and served prison terms. Giordano got a plea deal a few years later. No prison, a modest fine, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's the background of the of Alfonso Giordano.
Where'd you read that from?
Well, one of the things that I've got this from, you can go on to the cases. If you look into Mumia's cases, there is different websites you can look at. And one of the websites that I looked at was the PDC, which is the Partisan Defense Committee. They still got them posted where you can see the affidavits and all these people that I named in there, and you can read them for yourself. These are affidavits from live people. But what I did was I put it together. Now I'm going to give you a background of Arnold Beverly and his confession. So Arnold Beverly, but I've done researches and I cross-referenced some of this stuff, and I encourage others to do as well. Arnold Beverly, watch the videotape of Arnold Beverly's confession. His affidavit was signed in July 1999. Evidence, Faulkner, FBI informant. At the time of Faulkner's murder, police under federal investigation were worried about possible police informants. There's some telling in the police force. They corruption. They send somebody on your team is a snitch. Basically, this is what's happened. So they do like anybody else. They try to find the mole and they take care of themselves. But they use other people to deal with it, right? So now when you look at Arnold Beverly, he said a hit planned against Faulkner. And it breaks down that Mumia did not shoot Faulkner, right? It was eyewitness William Singletary, his deposition, 1990, that Faulkner was already shot when Mumia arrived. Police threatened Singletary and trashed his business as warning against testifying for Mumia. Cops on the scene. Police radio transmission between Central Command and officers at and traveling to the scene established large number of police at the scene in less than 90 seconds from Faulkner's call for backup. The first police team reporting from the scene arrived prior to the assigned team. Singletary corroborates that police officers, including white shirts, were at the scene immediately after the shooting. A witness at post-conviction hearing that undercover cops were on the scene, appearing to be men who were drunk or homeless, guns drawn, and ran across the street as shots fired, right? Mm-hmm. Now, Faulkner is shot per Beverly. Faulkner was shot in the back by someone running towards him on the same side of the street, and then Beverly ran across the street and shot Faulkner in the face at close range before Mumia came on the scene. Beverly's description of the shooting of Faulkner by more than one shooter from the different directions with weapons at different calibers. Beverly had his .22, his partner had a .38, explained the location of bullets and fragments recovering at the scene. The blood stains and the unaccounted for copper bullet jacket on the scene. The absence of divots in the sidewalk, as well as the location of the sidewalk, blood stains, none of which support the prosecution scenario. The medical examiner report provides a different caliber bullet and a sizable bullet fragment recovered from Faulkner's head wound that disappeared, right? There's a lot of fishy stuff going on. Basically, they give up this narrative. If you look at the prosecution narrative, then how come the ground ain't shot up? You know what I mean? If you stand over top of somebody you're shooting down, then the ground or something going to be shot up too. You know what I mean?
Right.
So with Beverly, his information and his confession, it corresponds to what happened at the scene. The evidence that was collected, the people, the witnesses, all of this corroborates, right? And he took a lie detector test and passed. But what I'm saying is nobody's talking about that.
Right, right. You gave the people a lot to chew on. I mean, you read straight from the affidavits.
I want them to do their research. I want them to go online. Like I said, these are human beings that did these statements. There's stuff you can find on the Partisan Defense Committee, PDC, websites. And you can look for affidavits. But my thing is, Gerard, we had a time at social media, internet, that we just can't be just going for any narrative that they give us. You know what I mean?
Right.
I know that was something processed, but that's what's been bothering me for living on the inside of this situation.
No doubt. You were just listening to the voice of Jamal Ibn Mumia, the oldest son of political prisoner, author, freedom fighter, journalist, writer, and so many other things. Political prisoner of war, Mumia Abu-Jamal. I am the People's Minister of Information, JR. We are signing off. This is the first, but not the last. We're going to be doing regular updates on Mumia and our political prisoners a little bit more often. So again, thank you, Jamal, for coming on.
Thank you. no problem, man. Like we said, we need more people like you, and thank you for having me.
Right on, bro. Appreciate you.